Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Henry Glassy and Pat Collins, and this is one of those interviews I think that comes once in a lifetime. It really is, and it's about a film called Henry Glassy Fieldwork. This was the world premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival from Pat Collins, and we're looking basically at Henry's work over the past 50 years, and I guess you could kind of call the culmination of that in this film, 50 years of doing existential ethnography. I hope that's okay, Henry. But he travels to five different cultures, and he looks at things like pure form, pure color, Brazilian sacred art, and we look at the hands, and we attend to things in an oral way and a visual way. Henry talks a great deal about nonverbal cues and listening through the eyes, and about method and about the patience that goes alongside of some of the work that these men and these women do. Henry says if God exists, he exists in God exists in the spirit of the human being. Henry talks about becoming a kid in another culture and about how important it is to eliminate prejudice and something simple complications, which I so absolutely love. And for Henry, when it comes to art and defining it, he believes that communities come together to agree on what is beautiful and what we might call this grammar of art. So this is a film for Henry that is about grace, I believe anyway, about grace and about generosity. It's about stories. It's about being alone and yet together with other people as well. He has this beautiful phrase where he talks about if I just put myself in front of other people, they'll be able to teach me something about, I would argue, how to be a better human. Fascinating interview with Henry and Pat, and a fascinating and brilliant film as well. Henry Glassy Fieldwork coming right up. DavidPeckLive.com for more information about my public speaking and my writing. You can purchase a copy of Real Change is Incremental there on the website. If you're getting behind or enjoying what we're doing here at Face to Face Live, please consider supporting us. You can do that. You can get behind it. The podcast, you can support us financially on patreon.com. We have a page there, $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month. It all goes towards helping to offset costs. And if you can't do that, and I totally get that and understand that, would you consider leaving a quote for us on iTunes? We would really appreciate that. And then, of course, sign up for the newsletter, forward this to other other people that you know who are listening to podcasts. Let's grow this community and sign up for, sign up for our newsletter? Yeah, sign up for our newsletter and leave us a quote if you can. Also, if you want to advertise on Face-to-Face, you can do that through our newsletters. You can do banner ads on the website and also embedded in the podcast themselves. We've got a pretty big reach now, hundreds of thousands of listens over the last 5 years, a big audience, over 20 countries, US, UK, Canada, probably the three most listened to countries, but we're as far southeast as Cambodia, and we go as far north as Mongolia, Singapore. It's really quite remarkable, this thing called the internet. Anyway, don't touch that dial. Rabble.ca, also a platform where I exist, where Face-to-Face lives, and news for the rest of us, journalists, artists, thinkers, writers, talking about issues that matter. Check that out as well, Rabble.ca, or check them out as well, Rabble.ca. And stay tuned. Coming right up, Henry Glassy and Pat Collins talking about their new film, Henry Glassy, Fieldwork. Well, welcome to Face-to-Face. We are joined by two very special guests. We've had a bit of a comical start here at the Toronto International Film Festival with Henry Glassy and Pat Collins, who were calling in Ireland. Henry here. I'm going to let Henry say hello.
Hello. How can we not be confused using all these machinery?
Yes, we've had a few technical issues. And Pat, do you want to say hello on the line from Ireland?
Hello, Davis.
Thank you.
Very
thank
good
you.
To be talking to you.
Thanks for joining us, Pat. I do appreciate it. I know, I think you just mentioned before we hit the record button, it wasn't quite your bedtime yet, but we're getting pretty darn close. So why don't you tell us a little bit about sort of the genesis of the film and maybe, I mean, it sounds like you and Henry have had quite a long relationship. I'd love to hear a little bit about that evolution and why you decided to record not only many artists, I suppose, but focusing on five countries. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, in terms of the origins of the film, it goes back to a radio interview that Henry had with a poet called Vincent Woods, a poet and playwright. And it was on Irish radio in 2010. And it was just kind of, I was kind of spellbound by the interview, and it was kind of an interview that Henry gave talking about art and talking about folklore, talking about his rural upbringing in Virginia. And it's an interview that really kind of burned into me. And I 2 years later, I wrote him a letter in September 10th, 2012, nearly exactly seven years ago, and I kind of proposed the idea of a possible film. Not sure exactly how the film was going to take shape, but I was very open to a collaborative making a film collaboratively.
Sure.
With Henry, and he wrote back to me. He doesn't do email.
He doesn't do email.
A letter
really,
came.
That, I find that surprising, Pat.
Yeah. Well, I do email, but Henry doesn't. So a letter came a month later. I wrote back to him, and then we exchanged letters for a few years. And then I met him in 2016 in Dublin. And again, we proposed the film, and Henry and Pravina had just finished a book on Brazilian sacred art. And the funding and the kind of idea of starting the film in Brazil kind of took shape simultaneously, and it just was kind of perfect timing. But it was perfect timing that took nearly 10 years. You know,
perfect timing that took nearly 10 years. I want to get Henry's take on this first meeting and the fact that he doesn't do email and all of that, and see where if he can validate all of this, Pat.
Yeah.
Pat doesn't do anything except speak the truth, so certainly everything that he says is something that was absolutely accurate, and you don't have to doubt it, that accuracy. But I think the larger story is also interesting in that Pat suggested to me that maybe I would be in a film, and honestly, that didn't hold much interest for me. But once I realized that his filmmaking skills, and he's a fantastic filmmaker, that his filmmaking skills could be allied with our ethnographic work, then I became very excited about it. So what I saw about the possibilities was a kind of combination of very slow, cheap methods with very fast, expensive methods, and how those could combine into a film that would really be richly evocative and expressive of the kind of experience that we'd had in Brazil. So it was important that I met Pat and immediately liked him. This is a man that I could easily work with. But it was also true that Praveen and I had finished a book on Brazil, and so that we were ready to share that book and those artists with another person. And it seemed to me that Pat had all the patience and all the skill in the world, and that he would be able to go with us into Brazil, and it wouldn't cause anything but happiness among the people that we worked with. And so really that's what it worked. That's how it worked. He decided to come to Brazil. We were there a couple of weeks before. We talked to all the artists. We made sure that people were ready for it. We made sure that people were interested in being in a film. Not everybody was. There was one man who didn't want to be in a film. He said, they want to pay me to be in a film? To hell with that. I do this art. I don't want pay for it. I want to do it out of love. But everybody else was very excited about being in the movie. And we talked to them about what it was going to be like. And Pat and his crew showed up. Everybody turned pink, and they got used to Brazil and the mosquitoes and the difficulty, and we all went together, and it was a wonderful collaborative experience because Pat had all the skills already. He had the patience, he had the ability. We just went out and met these people that we knew, and they immediately responded, loved Pat, loved the crew, Colm, Bob, everybody was great. And so there was a wonderful convergence of different worlds and different methods. As I say, we have a long, slow, cheap method, and he's got a very quick, expensive method, but I think they combined impeccably in order to create the kind of images that we wanted of our Brazilian friends.
Pat, just wondering, it sounds to me, what little I know of Henry, and I'm going to learn more, that he would make a good director. He knows kind of what he wants and where he wants to take things, and yet talked about the wonderful collaborative like nature of all this. Would you say you both sort of shared a similar vision for where you wanted fieldwork to go, for the film to go?
Yeah, I think so. I think my most kind of an important part of a director's work, I think, is especially if you're making the film with somebody or about somebody's work, is that you have to listen very carefully what they're telling you. And it's not, and sometimes you can convince people to do things that they don't want to do, but that you genuinely feel would be better for the film and would be better overall. But I think you do have to listen very carefully. And so when Henry might say that he doesn't understand the filmmaking process, you still have to listen to what the instinct that he has or how the artist might be represented. So it's kind of so when we discussed going to Brazil, I had a copy of his book, I think, before it was published, and he said we because of the geographical spread of Brazil and how big the country is, and it's very hard to get a grasp of how big Brazil actually is. Maybe not for an American, but for an Irish person, it's on a huge scale. And just so we kind of concentrated on Salvador and Maragogi Pino in a little village in Brazil, and he kind of, you know, it was a kind of a collaborative thing of who the best artist would be, but it wasn't even that collaborative in the sense that Henry kind of said, you know, mentioned like maybe 10 artists, and I kind of basically said, look, you know, that I'm really happy to kind of go along and film with the artists that Henry feels are worth filming, because it would have taken me years to find some of those people, and I probably never would have found them. You know, it takes a folklorist kind of patience and skill to go into a place and discover these people who were kind of largely hidden from kind of, say, publicity. They don't have agents working, you know, promoting them. They're in little shops on the side of streets, and there are in little workshops, and so it's really important for me to kind of not try to kind of force my own view. Like my initial, I suppose, impulse was to kind of Henry's approach to work and approach to living and approach to life, and then I'm trying to get those ideas across, and then trying to discover how best to do that.
how to best
you only discover by listening. You only discover by listening.
So I find it interesting that you talk about listening. It's a theme that's been coming up in a few of my interviews this festival. I mean, it comes up in a lot of the work that I do, actually, Pat Henry. I work as an international development consultant, traveled around the world, and I used to teach development at Humber College, and I would tell my students often that there were three things, you know, that you needed to, anyone who's listened to me on face-to-face has heard this before, but you need to listen, and you need to listen, and there's the third thing is you need to listen. It's all about listening. Yeah. I get the sense from Henry, and I'm going to let him answer this, but he has spent his life observing, of course, writing and reflecting, going very deep, but also listening on a variety of levels.
I think listening is a very good way to say it. And so that to make the film, what Pat had to do was rely on me having listened a great deal. And the thing is, he didn't have the time to listen. So Praveen and I did a lot of listening. But I think, you know, if you don't want observing, you want only listening, I think I want to complicate that a little bit, because Praveena was raised in Brazil. So she has Portuguese perfectly and natively. I don't. I haven't even bothered. Praveena's great at Portuguese. Why should I? So I'm observing all the time. And the fact is that we separate into two kind of functions in the middle of field work. And one of them is certainly listening, but the other one is observing very closely, because there are all kinds of wonderful things that happen non-visually, I mean non-verbally, that really you have to have a kind of visual attention. And so that we could offer a great number of anecdotes, but since we sort of divided ourselves into a pair, we already are a pair, but we're a very close pair, but she does the talking and she does the main listening, and I do a kind of listening, but it's really a listening through the eyes. It's a very slow, attentive, visual kind of communication that I really think I specialize in. Other places, I mean, I've spent a very long time in Turkey, and I learned to speak Turkish really quite well, but it took a very long time to do. But if I've got Praveena, I don't have to learn Portuguese. I can sort of follow Portuguese from knowing Italian. But I don't really speak it very well, and so I listen hard. But what I really also do is observe, and our work requires a great deal of that, a great deal of attention to the nonverbal cues that are being given in an environment. And so that before Pat takes over, and he's going to be largely a visual, I mean, he doesn't know any Portuguese either, so that film is going to be visual, ultimately. And so that it was important, and I think the great success of this film, that I had done a lot of visual attending, and Praveena had done a lot of oral attending, and brought those things together and handed them over to Pat, and he was able to really take off with a essentially visual take. And if you see the film, and I think it really works very beautifully, there's a lot of sound, very little talk. Now, we had a lot of talk, and so it's interesting that Pat made a decision in the creation of the film that he actually eliminated a lot of the conversations that were had. And in one version of the film, Praveena had done a lot of translating of Portuguese for the film to have subtitles for conversations. But as the film grew and as it matured, as it began to be its own thing, then the conversation, for the most part, went out. There's a long conversation with Ed Gival. It's great. It's very good. Praveena translated it, you know, from Portuguese into English, and it's great. But even when we hit the United States of America, where really people speak a variety of English, they don't talk much. Pat made a film that's very, very visual, and I think it's natural to him and very beautiful. And so that you could have a film, the kind of work that we do, certainly the kind of work that I did in Ireland, a decade in Ireland, man, there's a lot of talk. And people are really, really good at talking. And if you were to make a film about Ireland without talk being central, you'd be missing the point. But if you make a film about the artists of northern Brazil, and even the film about the potters in the Piedmont of North Carolina, really they're working very hard with their hands. And that then if you shift your vision to Pat's film, watch hands. Mm. It's just beautiful. There's a ballet of hands.
I was going to bring that up. I made a note about that. I have been working with my hands in a variety of different ways in construction. I do card tricks, and there's a real ballet to manipulating a pack of cards or a coin, and there's a real craft to it. And I would love to have a long conversation with you, Henry, about the distinction between art and craft. And I'm sure we could do a full 90-minute podcast on that. But frankly, everyone would turn the dial, I think. But maybe we'd have a few. Listeners, but we could talk about that. But the hands, Pat, was that a real conscious choice? I'm so glad Henry brought it up. You know, the tight close-ups, the silence for the a good 30 minutes into the film, at least. It's we need to pay attention, and it, obviously conscious and intentional on your part. But I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I was partly influenced, I think, by a series that was in Irish television in the 1970s, which was actually called Hens, and it was about people who worked with their hands, and it might have been 30 different half-hour programs, like beautiful scripts written by Benedict Kiley, an Irish writer, and just beautiful footage from the 1970s of people doing all sorts of, like, thatching and making saddles and stonemasons. And I think I had a kind of, it's one of my kind of favorite television experiences.
Did you say that it was called Hands?
It was called Hands, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was a beautiful series, and I always kind of regretted that I wasn't making films in the 1970s. I was too young. I was only born in 67, but I think Ireland, when Henry was in Ireland, actually, in the 1970s, I almost feel that there was a kind of a real kind of emergence of kind of modern kind of life coming into the world, but it still had its foot in the kind of ancient past, I think, and it was a great mixture of life in Ireland in the 1970s. And anyway, so I think I was kind of influenced a little bit by that, but you couldn't, but when you see the artists in Brazil working, it would be kind of almost crazy to shoot it kind of in a wide shot. You just have to go in, and especially with the first artist, Rosalvo Santana. No, he's making hands himself. It's kind of one of the most beautiful images in the film, I think, is when he's making hands with just a little.
Henry's agreeing with you, Pat.
Yeah, and it's a kind of a real. There's something kind of epic about it in a way, or something like almost godlike, I suppose. If you've got these hands making tiny, tiny hands of the religious statue, and it was. It's just beautiful, and we filmed it, but Rosalvo Santana was making it, so it was there in front of us. So you have to go in close to see it, and you have to see the detail and the texture of it. And but other times actually we did go back further, because sometimes like Samuel Rodriguez, when he's making the candomblé, the Orisha on the kind of from scrap metal. I mean, he's almost like doing a performance, and so you have to kind of see it in a wider angle. But still, you can see the sweat dripping off him, and you can see his eyes. Every time he's doing the soldering, his eyes close. He doesn't wear a mask or anything, and so it's kind of, you need to be in close with them, I think. And
well, I think Henry talked about this idea of patience. And I'm wondering, I want to talk about what great art is. And I think you sort of define it in the film, Henry, in a way that I don't know that I've ever heard it defined this way before. But it's kind of about sort of about practice. But I'm wondering, to something Henry said earlier, Pat, about patience, and to be able to hold a shot that long and that tight and that close to have that kind of focus and attention to detail. God is in the details, right? So however small G or capital G, I suppose, depending on how you define that. But it would almost be disrespectful to shoot some of that in a wide shot in a way, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. I mean, and I mean, we're only trying to reflect what the artist is trying to do in terms of, you know, the attention that he must give or she must give to their art. You know, they have to be so concentrated. And we have to reflect that to be anyway accurate in trying to capture the atmosphere and the kind of the thought that's going into it. And of course, I'll just come back out of that as well. And what we're trying to do then is trying to actually film the people that Henry has paid attention to, has observed and has listened to. And I mean listen in the widest possible sense of kind of paying attention. And so we kind of felt, as the edit went on, we kind of felt that best way of representing Henry's work was by just observing the artists at work and then giving it context.
This is what Henry's life has been made up of, right? Is that that's sort of what you mean?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Henry's ideas are kind of almost exhilarating for me to listen to him speak about art. But I think it would be kind of almost insulting to the artists to have Henry speaking over them, or you know what I mean. That it's they needed their full attention. They needed our full attention, and then we'd let Henry talk, and throw light backwards over the artists that we were watching in the first part of the film. You know, that is kind of.
And by the way, I don't think I've congratulated you both on the film. I love the film, and congratulations, and welcome to Toronto, and all of that. So,
thank you.
I think Henry, you said something about that's just ringing a bell. I've made some notes, but something about an agreement on what is beautiful. And not long after, you talked about celebrating complexity, and I look at how difficult some of these works must be—the ceramics and the making of the hands, and even the arc welding of the sculpture, which is just appeals to the construction worker that I used to be in me. Can you talk a little bit about that? I'm not sure I quite understand what you mean by about, you know, we need an agreement on what is beautiful, and is that art ultimately? Whatever we define as beauty, that aesthetic grammar, I think you referred to it as in the film.
Well, I think you've understood exactly what I was up to, but I would like to make a kind of simple complication for it. I don't think that there is a possibility that the world can agree about art. Instead, what you find is that all communities have an agreement about art. That was really the point that I was making. And so what I would say is a pretty simple. I think creativity is a human birthright. Everybody is born with the capacity of being an artist. You look at every little kid can draw, every little kid can dance. And slowly but surely, people are driven out of the natural course of becoming an artist. So everybody should be an artist. And everybody, I think, you know, very many people are, but they're artists in very different environments. Maybe they make good dinners. Maybe they plow good fields. Maybe they do whatever they do. But a lot of people don't as they mature, allow themselves to think about their work as art. But more importantly, when we encounter other people, we're very likely not to understand that what they're doing is art, because we come to that, you talked earlier about craft and art, and I think that's the conversation we're not going to have right now, but this is the point. Why would I call somebody else's art craft, diminishing it? Why would I say that somebody else's art is not art? Simply because I don't understand it. And so that what I have to do is, through patience, come into a position where I'm capable of entering into the community's discussion about the idea of the grammar of art. And then I can see how an individual that I might not have thought about as being an artist, maybe a person really good at driving a taxi cab, but if you get into the taxi cab world, the guys that drive taxi cabs and drew it very well are the artists of that work. And so what I think is pretty simple, and I don't think I've said it very well here, but is that everybody has the ability to become an artist. Everybody is headed towards art, because art is not more than or less than the fullness of human complexity. But if we come into another place, it takes us a long time to stop, listen, watch, pay attention, and come slowly into an understanding of what someone else's art is. If I were to develop out of my own experience an idea about what art is, then that idea is obviously going to be a kind of art of white guys, because that's what I am. I'm a white guy. So that if I want to understand African art, I'd better go to Africa, and I'd better sit down with the community, and I'd better spend a long time, and I'd better listen, and then I come away with some kind of an understanding. Not perfect.
Not perfect.
Impossible for it to be perfect. But adequately for me to be able to say that, although, dear friend, I don't know everything, I experienced a lot with these people, let me tell you how I understand that they've come to their understanding of what art is. And so that it needs to be a very patient procedure. You have to listen a lot. But for the most part, what you have to do is scrape away everything you've ever known before and become a kid again in another culture. And then you start out again in a different environment, in a different place, with a different religion, and that's crucial, a whole different vision of the world. And as you come to that difference, then you can at last be able to say, not that I understand, but that I can function as a translator between these people you don't know at all and yourself. I know enough about what you're interested in art. I know enough about what they're interested in art, and I can get in between, and I hope explain it. The whole purpose is to eliminate prejudice. The whole purpose is to eliminate presuppositions. The whole purpose is to get us away from the kind of conventions that we've been raised with and allow us to mature to the point that where we can engage with other people's conventions, not to accept them necessarily, but to understand them, to honor them, to respect them, to be patient with their existence.
So Pat, I'm getting the sense that Henry's quite the philosopher, as well as all the other things that he does. It's fascinating. I have questions. Henry, I would love for you to talk about the two things that cause you to be amazed. I think you said in the film were two things: the stories that your grandmother told, and your grandfather as the carpenter. And you know, you just said something that I think is utterly brilliant, that you need to go into another culture and become a kid again and sort of eliminate that presupposition, mm-hmm. and get rid of the prejudice and start over, dance again, splash in the water, clap your hands, and so on. Can you tell me about that amazement, that wonder? Because wonder is something I've studied philosophy for many years. As I said, I've done magic, and so I love that moment of the coin vanishes, and that sense of amazement and wonder. So you captured my attention in the film when you said that, but I'd love for you to chat a little bit more about that.
I think it's not very hard, and I think it'll probably lead us into the right place. The natural wonder of a small child, for me, had to do with my grandmother's stories. The family farm was really on the battlefield of Manassas, so that if in the springtime when we dug up, when they did the spring plowing, we came up with bayonets and cannonballs. We came up with the Civil War. So that from a tiny child, my grandmother was telling me the stories that she had learned from her great aunt who raised her. My grandmother raised me, and her great aunt was born in the 18th century. I was one person from the 18th century. And my grandmother made me just absolutely aware of the reality of the past. That's a wonder. That's an amazing thing to me. What was actually happening at that moment in the world, the Second World War was happening. What was happening in my head, the Civil War. So that was wonder. That was an amazement. And the second amazement was, for me, my grandfather was a wonderfully skilled carpenter and who made beautiful, beautiful furniture, and so that his shop was one wonder world. My grandmother's lap was another wonder world. One was about history, one was about art. And all that's pretty simple to say, isn't it? That's wonder. Then you grow up, and then I grow up and I'm told that the South is a place of horror, that the South is a bad place. It wasn't what I experienced. And that caused me to understand that my wonder wasn't everybody's wonder. That's a kind of a pretty basic thing, right? My wonder isn't everybody's wonder, and furthermore, what I think is wonderful, other people demean. In fact, other people tend to seem to hate it. I loved country music from the time I was a little child. Other people think country music kind of declassé. How can you say that? I mean, Hank Williams is the greatest songwriter we've probably ever had. But I learned that other people didn't feel that. Everybody said, people, once I got away from my home, what did I hear? The South is a place of violent prejudice. What I found, when I was a little kid, South wasn't a place of violent prejudice. My next door neighbors were black. They were my friends. I played ball with black kids. I loved an old black gentleman, I still do, called Marilyn Pettiford. I simply loved him. I was passionately in love with this elderly man because he was so kind and so gentle. Mm-hmm. In other words, I didn't understand, or I did understand, that there was a prejudice against the things that I found wonderful. I think that's probably simple then. So then I look around the world, and what do? I go to those places where I know there is wonder because there are human beings, but I also know that there's prejudice, and so that it shouldn't surprise us in this context that I spent a big part of my life, and probably maybe the most important 10 years, in Turkey studying Islam at a time that my nation was at war with Muslim people, that my nation thought it was just fine to bomb them from the air. It's just fine to kill all those Iraqi ladies because they're, what the hell is going on here? There's a horrible prejudice, and I can't stop that. I can't stop my idiotic government from doing crazy things. However, I can write a book about Muslim people, and I did. I'm very proud of that book. I love that book. I learned Turkish. I read the Quran. I learned how to practice namaz. Not that I became a Muslim, but I was able to get enough compassionate understanding that was linked to a passion of creativity that allowed me to say, I can write a book about Muslim people. And that wasn't just, you understand, it's just like my writings about the South. It wasn't just a book about something that was wonderful. It was a book about something that was wonderful that I knew other people didn't think was wonderful. And therefore, it's a part of my goal right now to fight against prejudice on behalf of the wonder of unwritten and marginalized and forgotten people. That's a fact.
Pat, has Henry written any country music, to your knowledge? Does he play the juice harp by any chance?
Yeah. No, I mean, he does play music, but I haven't heard him play music, but I know that he does. But I play music as well, and he didn't hear me either.
it's a fact that one of the things that unifies Pat and myself, and not only Patience, but we both love traditional music. Right, Pat?
Yep. Yeah.
So, Pat, we believe it or not, we've got to wrap up in a couple of minutes here, and I'm sad about that. But maybe we can do a part two down the road. How do you edit a guy like Henry? How do you figure out what to leave in? I think I'm more interested in what you've left out, actually.
Yeah, I mean, the only way that I could kind of that myself and the editor Keith Walsh could console ourselves during the edit was I was going to say. I'd keep saying, look, this is really, really interesting, but it's for the Q&A, probably, or it's for a book of interviews or something, because, you know, his depth of knowledge is phenomenal, and his experience in the field is phenomenal. So it's, you know, he's got the authority, I suppose, you know, of experience, and that's getting rarer and rarer, really. You know, it's one thing being well-read, but being out in the field and experiencing it firsthand. I mean, it occurred to me actually there that when you were talking the first time about the prejudice, it's the same kind of thing of coming from a small farming background in Ireland, and when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, it was a kind of a prejudice against small farms as if they were all backward, you know, mm-hmm. and that they were all... And I think maybe that's a kind of a shared thing, or maybe that's something that I saw or kind of picked up with Henry, is that there's a kind of... There's a prejudice against the small place. There's a prejudice against the thing that isn't making a splash. You know, everybody is gravitating towards the kind of the flashy kind of film or the flashy art or whatever. And I think it's important to kind of look the other way from that. Anything that's the kind of the new orthodoxy, it's better to kind of actually turn around and look at what's happening other places, because Once all that culture becomes mainstream, it's very, very important to kind of, like Henry said something great during the film. He said, which isn't in the film, but he kind of said, you know, why is somebody takes a photograph or somebody paints on a canvas, and that's art, and somebody does like really intricate embroidery, or somebody you know makes a rug, and that's called craft. I mean,
right.
That's class bias, really, you know, and that's what Henry says. I'm just kind of quoting Henry there. I hope I'm not misquoting him. But it's pure kind of class bias, and that's kind of what motivates me as well in terms of making the film about Henry, is to kind of highlight those kind of discrepancies in thought and so, kind of prejudice.
So Pat, I'm going to ask you one more question before I ask a question that's probably going to take Henry about 45 minutes to answer. That's my guess. And I have time, just so you know. And I think we're getting pretty close to your bedtime, aren't we, Pat?
Yes.
I figured so. This film is about Henry, but it's about a whole lot more than that, it seems to me. And I'm wondering how you would explain it to somebody who said, so fieldwork, tell me more. Or, you know, I'm not a fan of 30-second elevator speeches. I'm really not. I'm in for the conversation. I'm in for the full bottle of wine. Let's get to the bottom of this and then maybe return to it tomorrow again. But how would you talk about fieldwork? Because for me, it's about art. It's about community. It's about craft. And it's about going deeper. And it's about prejudice and sexism and racism. And I can keep going, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also not very good at synopsizing, you know, I always like the definition of a work of art is that it's not about anything, that it just
right.
is.
Right. It just
but,
is.
So, I mean, I kind of like to think in certain moments, I kind of think that it's a combination of things. It's trying to capture the work of Henry Glassy and trying to kind of do justice to the work of Henry Glassy. But if I'm explaining, you know, most people don't know who Henry Glassy is, so I have to go a little deeper. And I've actually always had problems describing what the film is about. You know, I can do it in two or three A4 pages, but I've had difficulty kind of trying to synopsize what the film is about. But I think it's about Henry Glassy, but it's about field work, and it's kind of, I suppose, it's about the kind of, one of the lines I came up with is about the rituals and rhythms of working artists in Brazil and Turkey and North Carolina and Ireland. But that's not doing it justice either, really. I mean, it's a combination of somebody who has a lot of learning, bringing that learning and intelligence into the field to create, you know, 20 books of about different communities and their art. And I think it's a celebration of kind of small places. And I don't mean small places in terms of kind of geographically small places. It could be Dhaka City or it could be Istanbul. It's just a kind of the unsung artists that are everywhere in the world. And it's a celebration of them, I think, you know.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's a celebration to me of that commitment and intention and that passion of these people that you would never have met before and hopefully now will meet because you've been, your eyes have been, you now have eyes to see, if that makes
sense.
And
you know, and those people, those artists to a certain extent, and I think maybe, I never asked Henry this, but I think that, you know, that they are literally everywhere.
Right, but right, right.
But they're just not.
Yeah, I love the fact that Henry says everyone is an artist, or at least has the potential to be an artist. So the last question for Henry, and there's probably three or four questions wrapped up in this, but I loved how you ended the film, Pat, and with the words of Henry saying that, you know, I can show up anywhere and someone will take me in. And then something along the lines of, I just come alongside people or step beside them or in front of them and they're going to teach me. And so I wonder, alongside of that, could we say that art is connected to community or is dependent on community or only exists within a community? And I think you start to the film with this profoundly existential question about individuals and yet we end, it seems to me, with others.
Yes.
I'll let you take it from there, Henry, as we wrap this podcast up.
Well, I don't know. I don't know exactly what Pat's film is about, but I can tell you what it does. It makes the world bigger. It expands the scope of existence. It actually makes the world seem bigger and actually be bigger. That, I think, is really what the film does. And so that's what I would think about that. If I were to say that the relationship of art to community, that's exactly your question. I think that every all people live in some kind of social association, and from that social association, they draw their ideas that they use in order to realize their natural impetus to art. But I don't think that ultimately art's going to depend on community. Ultimately, art depends on individuals. That's what I really believe. And I think that even if you think about the most communitarian arts in the world, ultimately those traditions are all individualistic. I mean, they want an individual to emerge and to be best. And so that indeed there's a community maybe in Brazil of Catholics, and they recognize nonetheless that Edgival is the best of all those artists. And so he depends upon a community, but ultimately they depend on him more than he depends on them.
So there you have it, folks. We've been talking with Henry Glassie and Pat Collins about their new film, Fieldwork, here at the Toronto International Film Festival. Pat, thank you for your time today, or this evening, I guess,
thanks,
from, as my dad would say, from across the pond. I really do appreciate it. And to Henry, thanks to you as well.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was a great time with you, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.